Well, everyone, welcome to another General Council meeting at the City of Marion. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that it's about 8 degrees and members of the public might have the benefit of listening in the warmth of their own homes if they're interested in the meeting. I acknowledge that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. The meeting will be audio recorded. I ask elected members if there's any declaration of potential conflict of interest. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I have a conflict of interest with the transformation project one because of a family member who's working in that space, in that area. So I'll be leaving the room for that one.
Rightio, when we come to that, Councillor Telfer.
I have a perceived conflict of interest to do with the Regulated Tree Maintenance Fund, and I will leave.
And Councillor Schilling.
I was going to ask, will conflicts of interest that were noted last agenda that weren't adhered to be followed through to this one, or do we just declare it again?
It should be declared when the item comes up, if not before.
Yeah, so I'll just declare a perceived conflict of interest with the Tree Management Fund, but I will remain in the chamber.
Now, I recall Councillor Schilling mentioned last time he had a tree which might be eligible for the fund. And Councillor Telfer, because a reason has to be stated, is that also the case with you?
Yes, I have a tree that straddles the border and I therefore may be using that fund.
Very well, thank you. There being no others, we'll keep moving along. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes? Last General Council meeting, moved. Councillor Telfer, seconded. Councillor Gard, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. Now, the adjourned draft city limits and publications policies on page 25. Members will recall that in line with public demand, the elected members' pages have been restored to future editions of the city limits. Has the policy been amended in accordance with that motion of council? Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, what's happened on this item is that the draft city limits publications policy had previously been moved and seconded, and then it was adjourned off. Then what happened is we received the member's motion, which then required the policies to be amended. What we are recommending is that the mover and seconder withdraw the item and that we bring it back to the next council meeting with those amendments made.
Right, so we're not in a position to make them on the spot tonight.
No. It's just got messy.
Fair enough. So I think it's with leave of the meeting, isn't it? If Councillor Gard and Councillor Duncan are prepared to withdraw, they're moving and seconding, they are, and no one's objecting, so that will be the tidiest way to do it. Thank you, Ms. McKenzie, that sorts that out. So there being no deputations or petitions, committee recommendations, the open minutes at least of the Finance and Audit Committee and the Special Review and Selection Committee moved on block by Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Gard, thank you. Any questions? If not, all those in favour raise your hand. Thank you. The exercise will keep you warm anyway. They're passed, thank you. We now come to confidential items and I think I don't think there was much controversy about the reasons for confidentiality, so a member might like to move all of those cover reports on block. Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Telfer. Councillor Hull?
Yeah, I'm not sure why the confidentiality applies to the special selection committee. Because unless there's some embargo on notifying the successful candidates.
I think you might be onto something there. So we're looking at page 66 for the substantial report. Normally, the offer hasn't been made. So normally, just have a look at the confidentiality motion. You do have a good point, Councillor Hull, because it talks about being kept confidential for 12 months, and perhaps that, instead of the standard wording, that should be words to the effect that until the successful candidates are advised, or something of that nature, or have accepted.
Embargoed until
then. So could I... that, mind you, Councillor Hull, doesn't come up in the cover reports, because that's just about the confidential discussion, which probably still applies. But when we get to that motion, staff by that time may have come up with some different wording so that the minutes and the report... the minutes, you still want unsuccessful candidates' names to be kept in confidence normally. But the minutes at least could be publicly released. So I'll just ask staff to consider that. Thank you, Councillor Hull, for that point. In that case, in relation to the confidentiality orders regarding discussion of the various items, I'll put that. All of those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And so as we proceed to the first one, Digital Transformation Program, staff will need to check whether they are in fact on the list to be in the room or not. Thank you. So I suppose for the sake of propriety, we should close the door as we go into confidence. Fed budget review on page 67. Unless there are any questions, then someone like to move that we accept the revised budgeted statements. Councillor Duncan, thank you. Seconded Councillor Schilling. All right. If there aren't any others, then... Councillor Hull, yes?
Given this review, we just actually did something that pleased me a lot with the Tarnham decision, was that whilst we were unsuccessful with grant applications, we're actually going to get on with it. And I'm just wondering, with this budget review, has it indicated to... can administration indicate to this council whether we do have more capacity to actually fund some of our projects outright rather than being relying on other levels of government?
It's partly a political question, partly a financial question. There's always room for more if you're willing to borrow and et cetera, and cut elsewhere. But Mr. Barnwell, what can you advise? Can council afford to do more stuff?
Through the chair, I suppose that at recent Finance and Audit Committee, just reflecting on some of their comments, they reflected on council's appetite to do more, obviously, and the willingness to borrow if they needed to. I suppose what's reflected in the budget review report is, and it's something a step we took with the digital transformation report, is that we are identifying that we have savings of 717 at third budget review. We're also saying that we're actually going to apply those savings straight away to the DTP program, and our intention is in the second year to actually to seek and have targeted savings to fund the second year of the program within our existing budgets. Council has capacity, obviously, to borrow, and it depends on council's appetite at the end of the day. They could increase their funding through borrowings, but at the end of the day, when it, depending on the level of borrowings, that there will be some level at point where you'll have to be able to repay that and increase your capacity to repay. So if we're trying to target low rate increases at 1%, 1.2%, at some point the capacity will have to kick in where we'd have to increase that rates recovery or find additional savings within the existing budgets to fund those additional borrowings. So it's a tricky balancing one, but obviously my objective is to continue to find savings within the existing budgets and make sure we're not over budgeting for things. We're not putting any surplus budgets in there in the first place, and we're trying to get a balanced position so we can go to our ratepayers with the fairest position based on what we need to do.
Councillor Gard, a question?
Your Worship, I did have a question. On page 83, it's a relatively minor point compared with the overall scheme of things, but the full year consultants budget is listed as 1.653 million, and consultants expenditure year to date is almost 600,000 short of that. I'm just wondering, is there an explanation for it's unlikely, I guess, in the month of June we're going to spend that relatively large amount. Is there an explanation for that discrepancy there?
Good question, Mr. Barnwell.
Through the Chair, you will notice that some of the big expenditure there is in relation to information management technology projects. So yep. As we're undertaking the GTP project, there is consultants involved in some of that, so that expenditure will increase in May and June. But whether we have anticipated that's the full year budget, we will spend that at this point in time, but we may well be able to come under that. Thanks.
Just on the same page, Mr. Barnwell, I know I did email about it during the week, but I still struggle to see that consultancy fee that was spent under people and culture. Well, I think that's where it should be, but the recruitment figure that the review and selection committee saw was $220,000 for an annual fee. But when I look on page 83, look at people and culture, it's nothing like that figure. So can you relate these figures to that other figure?
Through the Chair, on page 83, if you look down just before the total of total consultants expenditure, there's a recruitment line in there and it's 218 at the moment. That's the figure that closely aligns to what you saw at the Review and Selection Committee.
I'm sorry, I missed the separate recruitment line.
Yep, that's okay.
Thank you. Thank you. The other one I was going to ask, Mr. Barnwell, was in relation to carryovers. So back on pages 72 in particular, it talks about the carryover budget from 2019-20, the previous financial year. So I can understand there's always a carryover. We can accept a certain amount of that. But there seems to be still a substantial carryover or unspent money from the previous financial year in May, this financial year. So, I mean, are we starting to contemplate a whole year of carryover moving from 1 year to the two financial years ahead, or are we working on eliminating that?
Through the Chair, we certainly are trying to work at eliminating that. For instance, the big one there is the Coastal Walking Trail, which was originally pushed into this year, and now the timing of that has been rescheduled, and a lot of the work will happen next year and the year after. So that was one which probably wasn't timed correctly in the first place, or based on what we knew at the time. The air conditioning, as we know, the air conditioning project is actually undergoing at the moment, and there will be a minor amount of carryover on that. I think it's only minor because the works are happening as we speak. And Capella will happen as that project happens. But yeah, ideally, our focus is to have a much sharper focus on the project reporting going forward, and we want to certainly align and eliminate those carryovers going forward. It's my objective to support the teams to actually try and eliminate that, time it right in the first place, and then eliminate them carrying over the works.
Thanks for that. Councillor Holt?
Another issue with this council has
troubled the previous CEO for a number of years, and whilst there has been some improvement, I just want to know whether Mr. Harrison is keeping a very close eye on this, because it's all very well for us elected members to set a budget. You know, we'll be doing that soon. It's another thing when it's not actually actioned, it doesn't actually materialise, and we have these carryovers. So I just want to know, sort of heads up, I suppose, a bit like the other item we mentioned before, which I can't talk about in a public setting, but it's just heads up about, you know, what has transpired in recent times and business continuity in terms of how our CEO approaches it.
Any comment, Mr. Harrison?
Thank you, through the Chair. Briefly, I did mention, I think, two General Council meetings ago that we are proposing to introduce from the new financial year in July an Executive Budget Committee process, which I will be chairing, which means that we will actually, as a executive leadership team, be examining and looking at the budget on a month-by-month basis. And each of the cost centres or each of the portfolios within the City of Marion will have their budgets examined on a month-by-month basis, whereby we'll be seeking to harvest slippages or unspent monies back into a central area, and also having the ability to push that out where we have cost pressures to respective areas in more real time on a month-by-month basis. It'll also require each of the ELT as sponsors and also the senior leadership team, the SLT members, to personally present to the Executive Budget Committee to speak about individual projects, particularly capital works projects. So we looked at further trying to reduce any potential unaccounted slippage or timing issues and bring them on a month-by-month basis to account, and also the ability then to have conversations, I would think, between January and March with the Chamber as to accelerating projects or refunding projects sooner than we may have thought because of opportunities the budget presents to ourselves. It certainly would be my intention to minimise, without going over budget, but minimising any surpluses or slippage on a year-by-year basis. And I think we can do better again than what I've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. While the carryovers appear to be trending in a downwards direction, I think we can even get more sophisticated and more precise in relation to governing and monitoring and driving the budget process on a month-by-month basis, so we have better accountability come May and June each year. So I would be very optimistic that we'll see further enhanced improvements with overall budget management, with greater levels of ownership across all of the senior management group on a month-by-month, year-by-year basis going forward from July this coming year.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we can move on to the CEO probation performance review timeline approach. Councillor Schilling moved. Seconded Councillor Duncan. Any further? Mr. Harrison, you're happy enough?
Thank you.
Then I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So we move on to the Regulated Tree Maintenance Fund. A couple of members mentioned they may wish to declare a conflict of interest. It's Councillor Schilling, but he's staying in the room, and Councillor Telfer declared a conflict of interest and has left the room for the reasons already discussed. So over to you, councillors. Councillor Hull.
I'm happy to move this, Mr. Mayor. In doing so, I want to commend the staff for picking this up and running with it. It has so many inherent benefits to our city. Now, just to shore this up, we've been doing this with heritage buildings for many years, where people who have a heritage building can actually apply for funding if they're going to do some maintenance or whatever else. In this case, this is about a significant oil regulated tree that happens to be on private property. And as we all know, we've lost so many in recent years. And whilst I would welcome such a tree in my yard, and I do have a nice, good, substantial tree, I'm not sure what species it is, some people find that a challenge because it might be impacting on the neighbour. It might pose what they see as a hazard to their own property. And there's arborist fees and all those other consequential costs involved in maintaining a significant tree or regulated tree. What worries me is, Mr. Mayor, if we don't actually provide some incentive like this to those people who are custodians of these trees, there might be the temptation to move the tree on. And let's face it, they have their ways and means. I see this as an opportunity to actually saving a lot of trees because the residents are getting a bit of a helping hand in terms of maintaining those trees to a safe level. I understand that we're not the only council that has done this. There's a couple of others in Greater Adelaide. So we're not the first. And I think part of the challenge is marketing this, Mr. Mayor, getting the message out there about what we're doing and what's on offer to the community. So there's good take up of the proposal. So I recommend this to the council.
Seconded by Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, very happy to second this. I think it's a tremendous tremendous concept, and coming from our area, we really do see a dearth of trees. There's just nothing there. I'm really interested to see some of the other potential benefits for this council in this area as well. It's things like actually knowing where our significant trees are and what they are, what health they're in. I think that's of incredible benefit to us. Whereas at the moment, if they're on private property, we can't go and look at them. We can't go and see what sort of nick they're in. So I think there's some other sort of other benefits that we may glean from this project too.
Thank you. Anyone against? Then all those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. We move on to page 94, Hugh Johnson Boulevard Reserve Upgrade. Moved, Councillor Duncan. Seconded, Councillor Schilling. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Duncan?
Really great. It's extremely good. Thank you. And we've been going through this process for a while, and the community are really involved and supportive, and they love all the different areas that this Hugh Johnson will upgrade will provide.
Thank you, Councillor Schilling. Happy, she said. Okay, anyone against? Then in that case, all those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. That's a good news story. Thank you. On to the draft budget, etc., page 151. Thank you to members of staff who came along and go home and get warm. Thank you. So start off, any questions? Otherwise, someone to move draft budget, Councillor Telfer. Seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Telfer?
I just want to say that we look forward to the new initiatives. We've got a whole set of new initiatives that are very important to our city, and they stand out for us.
Councillor Hutchinson's fine. Anyone against? Councillor Schilling, question?
No, I know I have put this in an email to Mr. Barnwell, but have we got final capital value numbers yet, or are we still waiting?
Barnwell, valuations, was it?
Through the chair, yeah, we are still receiving data, and we do have a considerable amount of rating data as we speak. We don't probably expect a huge change. What we have seen is the spread, so the distribution across the suburbs hasn't really changed, to be honest. It's by 0.012 or 2% of each one, so there's no real change across the suburbs, so that's kind of a good thing. Our residential increase is up around 2.85% overall, but of course that's all over the city as such, so there's no real, we didn't have a 10% up here and a 2% down there, which is a good thing because it gives a level playing field for the whole city. The one bit of data that is probably a bit was the one standout was the commercial data has changed, particularly the shopping centres like Westfield, Castle Plaza and Hallow Cove. They've had a devaluation of an evaluation basis of about 12%. So they are our biggest ratepayers. So that that will have an impact. So that realistically, that will that distribution will have to go across the rest of the ratepayers. So one way to probably counteract that is maybe to increase, and depends on what the council feel about this, is to increase the differential on commercial, which would counteract that. It would have to lift from 85% to probably about 95% to actually counteract that claim. But realistically, if we feel that is it fair and reasonable to penalise the commercial facilities who are probably doing it tough based on that. I can tell you, I just had a quick look at some data this afternoon prior to the meeting, that about 80% of our ratepayers, we talk about valuations going up or down, and we know the average rate increase is 1%, but about 80% of our valuations will be less than 2%, so there's no major variation there. About 1% of our rating will actually hit the capping level, which is minimal, I suppose, compared to what other council may experience. So they're the big impact sale that, and that data will come true to the next council meeting. I know you won't be in attendance, unfortunately, but I can forward it to you as soon as I get it. But the key point is that the distribution is reasonable across all our suburbs. There's no big high increase or decrease in any particular suburb. The big noticeable difference was the commercial valuations, which have come in about 12% under what they would have been previously.
Yes, and could I say, Mr. Barnwell, that councillors need to be very careful when they hear propositions like that. There's a lower valuation, which is substantial, so we could just charge them more to make up the money we were getting from them, because the devaluation actually tells us, if we stop to think about it, that they have not been doing as well as they have been in the past, and COVID or other reasons might have something to do with that. So it's very important that we don't make decisions on the run with propositions like that. If it is worth talking about, let's consider it between now and the next meeting, and you can advise us accordingly, Mr. Barnwell.
True to the Chair, yeah, I appreciate that. And look, as I say, when 80% of our ratepayers are going to experience and no greater increase than 2%, I think it's probably fair and reasonable that that valuation does reflect the business, and I wouldn't be proposing any change, but I just said that is an option if council did decide to do that.
Thank you. And the other point I'll make is about a mischievous newspaper article, I think in the last few weeks, which talked about a council bonanza, whereby the valuations were increasing as the value of general reviewed properties. And of course, if you apply the current rate in the dollar to a 10% increased valuation, it looks like council's reaping thousands of extra dollars off the property. But because we set the rates according to an average residential rate in the dollar, if the house property goes up, our rate in the dollar goes down. So we're not actually ripping the public off those thousands of dollars, contrary to what the newspaper might have suggested. Any comment on that, Mr. Barnwell?
Through the Chair, that is correct. And there's another, they're seeking more data now about the rates in the dollar, so I don't know what sort of story they're going to pull out now. But council anticipates the required funding for to deliver our budget is a 1% increase in revenue. We don't get an extra 3% if the valuation goes up 3%. The adjusting factor is the rate in the dollar, which because the valuations have gone up, will actually fall. So, we're not have a windfall gain because the valuations increase or decrease. We use the rate in the dollar to actually balance that out and only seek funding from the ratepayers as to what we need to deliver our budget, capital and operating budgets.
Thanks. Questions, Councillor Hull?
Correct me if I'm wrong, the vacant land has gone up. We discussed that. Did that increase?
Through the Chair, yes. As per Council's direction at the March forum, we have increased the differential on the vacant land from 100% to 120%. Okay. Yeah.
The other question I have, Mr. Mayor, is there's been some good discussion about that newspaper report, and I remember making comments on it on social media. The really odd situation we have in the state of South Australia is that we adopt the rate in the dollar before we adopt the valuation report. and it should be the other way around. I've maintained that for years. Like, if we have logical, sequential decision making, you would actually adopt the valuation report before you went on to set the rate in the dollar. And that's not this particular council's fault.
Yep.
It is the system.
So,
we
Councillor
have.
Hull, you're speaking in the debate, although you're not speaking against the motion.
Well,
but your point is very relevant to the agenda for the council meeting in which we adopt the budget. So, Mr. Barnwell, can you respond to that as a question as to whether it's appropriate to alter that order of the various council budget items in the agenda?
Through the Chair, we have previously got advice legally around the order of events to adopt in that meeting, and we are following the legal advice. That is the advice that we have to do.
I suppose that puts an end of it, an end to it, if that is the legal advice. If there are no other questions, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we move on to the bylaw review on page 244. And the most significant thing I could see from the Chair is that there had been a discussion with elected members about roosters and similar animals in particular, and that staff have drafted a bylaw which does not reflect the discussion with elected members. So I think elected members need to be very careful about that in considering the motion before us. I wouldn't want elected members to think that if they wanted to support the recommendation, that they would be endorsing something that was the view of elected members at the previous informal gathering.
On that note, is it possible to hear from administration what their rationale is for the rooster issue? Like, can they better explain their case?
Yes, we've got Mr. Delacombs and Ms. Perrin coming forward to explain. And the difference is between prohibition of roosters or allowing roosters but on conditions. So who would like to go first? Mr. Delacombs, thank you.
Thank you, through the Chair. So the matter was discussed at the forum, and both sides of that particular bylaw were canvassed. And in the interim research that staff did, noting some members of council desire for an outright ban, was that our initial research indicated that a prohibition would be a better way to go through means of allowing a permit system in exceptional circumstances. And at the council meeting following the elected member forum, where we discussed that did get some support from council as an approach, noting that an outright ban may in fact not get through the LRC process in terms of how that's portrayed in infringing on people's rights. So the wording of the bylaw and how we would promote it as it's drafted, as it's before you tonight to be endorsed, is that the keeping of roosters and peacocks, noisy birds, is prohibited. So that is the message that would that staff would be putting in the community. However, it does allow, in exceptional circumstances, the keeping of a rooster with conditions. So the sorts of conditions would be about not having nuisance, not causing a nuisance, and the sorts of situations where we would anticipate allowing such a rooster to be kept is not just as a general pet. There are poultry shows, you know, like the upcoming Royal Adelaide show. Poultry is a prized category with hundreds of entries, and the keeping of a rooster for a show might be a reason the council deems an acceptable reason to keep such a rooster. But if that rooster was found to be causing a nuisance, that permit would be revoked, and that person would need to find alternate accommodation for that animal.
Oh, just in response to that, the mayor is the legal spokesperson for the council, and I can assure everyone I will not be telling the community that keeping roosters is prohibited if in fact it's permitted by the bylaw. There's no way I'll be misleading the community, even if staff have said that that's what they'll go out and do. So any other questions before we proceed? Councillor Schilling.
Thank you. Just with regards to the draft bylaw, do you believe there would be any issues with it going through the Legislative Review Committee? We seem to have a few issues with that committee lately.
Mr. Della Coombs.
Thank you, through the Chair. It's hard to predict, given our recent experience, just what they're going to do. We did reach out to the committee secretary and asked whether we could engage in a process that might help us navigate the system in getting some successful bylaws and help us prevent a repeat of our last couple of attempts of having to do multiple consultations. However, that was denied by the committee, and we've been told just to present our bylaws as per normal. I think as they are drafted, they do have a better chance at getting through. And I would just like to clarify that the wording of the bylaw in the animal management bylaw is that a person must not, without the permission of council, keep a rooster.
Okay. Other questions, Councillor Valescu?
Because that reflects a true situation, and also it would be probably less of a human rights violation or individual freedom violation if you do say heavily regulated as opposed to prohibited, because that's what it sounds like it is. That's my first question.
Thank you, through the Chair. We can and work on the messaging. The term prohibition, and I mean, you know, the word that's reflected in the bylaw is that you're not permitted to keep a rooster without the permission of council. So heavily regulated, it's prohibited to keep one without permission of council. So there are many ways we can work with the comms team to get the right message out to our community that balances the needs of the legal standpoint of the bylaw, but while also communicating an effective message about what we're seeking with the bylaw.
We actually reach out to the, and it may not be something that staff do, it might be through the leadership, a mayor or a CEO level. Why don't we reach out to the members of the committee and actually, because they're the ones that tend to have a view and make the decision.
I can partly answer that it's still rather difficult, Councillor, without actually having the draft bylaw. And even if you showed it to an individual member of the committee, if they're sensible, they're going to want to get advice on that. And effectively, that doesn't happen outside of the committee process in a proper way, because the committee will often have legal advice, at least the advice of the secretary of the committee. So it's not as straightforward as that. And that sort of one-to-one or informal approach doesn't necessarily give both sides of the story. When a bylaw is committed by the, when a bylaw is considered by the committee, it is often the case that they get messaging from two sides of the story. So even though they might be sympathetic, if one person approaches them, when they get two sides of the story in a full committee deliberation, it might be a different result. So it's not that simple, but I'd invite Mr. Della Coombs to add what he wishes to that.
Thank you, Chair. I think you've summed it up in terms of the approach that needs to be undertaken. If the difference between what staff can do and what elected members and council can do.
Councillor Valeska, was that it? Well, what Mr. Dill... There is a structure, and what Mr. Delacombe said before is council should put up the bylaw that they want to put up. That will initiate some process whereby the committee might come back with feedback. And indeed, that happened with the trolley bylaw initially, leaving aside the final result of that. So it's really up to council to think, we must do the best we can in terms of what the community wants and managing whatever the problem is. And if the committee says, well, you're almost there, or we can see what the problem is, but you need to do this, that can be addressed subsequently in the process before a final refusal. Any other questions, Councillor Telfer?
Back to the roosters and peacocks. I'm wondering if the third column that talks about, we've now talked about roosters and peacocks being not permitted, and then I'm wondering if the next phrase, the sum allowance, needs to be taken out and just that roosters and peacocks are not permitted except for exceptional circumstances through a permit system. That seems more sensible than talking about allowances, which have some subjectivity about them.
Perhaps this is a case where it would be worth suspending standing orders just to work out where elected members really want us to end up with the, with that particular bylaw. As I understand it, the rest aren't terribly controversial from what we can understand anyway. You can go that way if you like, members. Otherwise, we can just... another option would be to deal with bylaws 1 to 6, and then move to the rooster bylaw separately. That's another way of doing it. In your hands, members. Councillor Masika.
Because we need to spend the time on number 7, and then the other one we can go very quickly and clear them on the and agree on them.
Very well. So that's really just the existing recommendation, except it's saying 1 to 6 instead of 1 to 7. So that will deal with all of the other bylaws, which are essentially our existing bylaws. He's moving that way. Did you wish to speak further to it, Councillor Masika?
I'm looking up for this one with the roosters and peacock. You know, it will be very hard to go and tell the people that they shouldn't keep roosters and peacock while they've been keeping them. So we needed to look up pros and cons and how can we approach this to make sure that we are consistent and we are being supported by the community, or we do consultation and we get the feedback from the community. Otherwise, it's going to be hard for us with the community, and it's going to be rejected by the committee from the parliament, and then it will be completely wasting of time. So that's why I wanted to, we deal with them separate, and this we invest more time on number 7 later on down the track.
But Councillor Masika, you're putting forward the proposed bylaws 1 to 6 for consultation. Very well. Is that seconded? Councillor Valescu. Anyone against? Then question, Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, in regards to the shopping trolley bylaw, it says in the report that we're waiting on the Premier to write back to us. Now, the Premier might never write back to us. So, you know, what's the fallback position on that big issue that we've been trying to deal with on behalf of the community?
Well, yes, you might be disappointed at the lack of options there. Ultimately, it's in council's hands. I have got another suggestion, a totally different approach that I'd like to see staff investigate. Now, whether that happens informally or whether it should be done by a motion, I haven't actually applied my mind to that yet.
Through the chair, may I make a comment about the rooster bylaw, the animal management bylaw?
Oh, can that just be postponed? We'll deal with it separately. Thanks, Ms. Perrin. Well, I'll ask it in the form of a question relating to trolleys. Why couldn't council clear any trolleys they see from public land, whether it be roads or footpaths or verges, which after all shouldn't be there, they've been dumped there, and store them and return them to the rightful owner upon payment of an appropriate collection and storage fee? What would be wrong with that? Coombs.
Thank you, through the chair. I have part of the answer. I believe that a collection can occur, obviously at council's cost, and I think that's been previously investigated to some degree by how much resource that would take from council. And I believe the storage can occur, but I believe under advice that I've obtained, I don't have legal advice, but I've heard from another council who does part of that practice or has done that practice in the past, that they are unable to make that charge. So given that that person's, that company's belongings, that we can't charge them for basically taking that off our streets. So we can do part of it, but we can't charge the fee. And I'm happy to follow that up with written advice.
Yes, please do. And perhaps that goes some way to answering Councillor Hull's query. After all, it's just rather strange to us councillors and members of the community in that somebody dumps hard rubbish at the corner of the street, we can find them. But if they dump a trolley, you're saying we can't find them. And I just don't understand that.
Mr. Mayor,
Councillor Hull?
The answer to the question is conflicting and a little bit circular, because I asked that question why we can't actually do what we did before the last council election, round them all up. We had TV crews there with hundreds of shopping trolleys, and we were told that legally we were prohibited from doing that. And yet I'm hearing now we can gather them up. So excuse me for being a bit confused about what we can or can't do.
So we'll await the advice from Mr. Della Coombs between council meetings. Perhaps it needs to be backed up with legal advice. If we have to get our own, if we can't get our hands on someone else's, that would be useful. Other questions? You have spoken, Councillor Masika, but go ahead with the question.
Managed to pass bylaws by putting up the locks on the trolleys. You can't take them out of the specific area. And then I want to ask the staff if they can investigate what sort of bylaws they were put forward to their government, and they were endorsed, and see if we can negotiate with the, those supermarkets in South Australia before we put back into our bylaws. That's the question which I seek. If you can investigate for us why it was approved over there, Queensland, Victoria, but we can't do it in South Australia.
Well, that can be taken as a question on notice.
If I can give part of the answer.
Oh,
now.
Oh yes, Mr. Dylan Coombs, thank you.
Thank you. So staff did investigate those bylaws in the creation of our one over the last couple of years. And it's also important to point out that the mandating of a lock mechanism in the ACT is actually by the Territory Government. So that's brought in at a higher than local government level, mandating that system. other council jurisdictions were able to negotiate with their various processes a bylaw to get through, and obviously ours failed through pressure on the LRC and the Parliament to dismiss it. So I think for any, and that's the reason the previous motions were sought, to seek clarification from the Premier about whether there would be any support in Parliament for us to pass a bylaw of some description. The other point I would make is that the Environmental Protection Agency recently conducted a review into the Local Nuisance and Litter Control Act, and had made a recommendation that shopping trolleys be added to the definition of litter, which would give council some power and authority to deal with this issue. However, there is no fixed time for that, and we, in terms of the review of that act, and the best guess we do have is that it won't be in this term of Parliament, and indeed maybe 1 to 2 years away.
And maybe never, so one can't really rely on that. All right, we have a motion. It's been seconded by Councillor Vlescu, and I'll put that motion then. All those in favour for the 1 to 6, that's carried unanimously. All right. Now, the choice in relation to the so-called animal management, and we know we're all really talking about roosters primarily here, is either endorsing the bylaw that's been drafted, which is basically, I don't want to play with words, but you can apply for a permit and get one, as opposed to a prohibition. We just need to test this some way. If people want to test the current one, and if it's defeated, then we'll test a motion that staff are directed to draft a bylaw prohibiting the keeping of roosters in the council area and see what they do with that. So, yes, Councillor Holt?
Could I ask that Councillor Telfer's suggestion about taking the ambiguity out of the wording on this be considered?
It doesn't have a material effect. We do need to sort out the principle. Councillor Telfer's comment was in relation to a table at the back of the report titled Bylaws Snapshot, and didn't actually impinge on the bylaw itself. We have to sort out, do you want something where people get a permit, they keep roosters, and neighbours complain, etc., or do you want to just say no roosters in the City of Marion? That's what it boils down to.
Well, can I pose a question to you? Given that you've made it clear that you're the primary spokesperson for the council, after hearing from the staff, what's now the problem?
It's simply one of principle. Which way elected members want to go? I'm not going to tell you which way to vote, but we just need to be clear to vote. The reason I made a point at the outset before debate was because the bylaw didn't reflect what seemed to be a prevailing view among members at an informal briefing. And I didn't want members to accidentally vote for endorsement of a proposed bylaw which didn't reflect their views. Because sometimes, I have seen it happen, believe it or not, that people will vote for something without fully understanding what they're voting for. And in this highly technical area, I thought members might appreciate that assistance.
I appreciate that, Mr. Mayor, but can I just make 2 points? Order.
It depends what you're doing. I've invited members to move a motion. We actually need to get on and test this point.
All right, I'll move the motion as printed.
Yep, okay. So essentially to endorse the bylaw regarding animal management. Did you wish to speak to that? I do.
Look, I asked the staff to come forward to explain their position. I believe they have. I think that... Right from the outset, Mr. Mayor, we didn't have a rooster bylaw up until right now. It was mute. And tonight we will have a bylaw about roosters. And I also believe that the safeguards are there for those people that might have showbirds, for example, breeding stock, that the council can actually come back to them and say, look, I'm sorry, you haven't upheld your part of the bargain, and therefore we're going to order you get rid of your rooster. That provision is there. I don't think anybody can deny that. There is something for the staff to fall back on. Now, the number of poultry breeders in this city would probably be maybe, I don't know, I'm only guessing, maybe on this hand, I wouldn't think there would be too many. I used to be one of them until the council told me to get rid of my rooster, and I was only too glad to take it up to Herbray and embed it in their breeding stock. But Mr. Mayor, I just think we've come a long way from having nothing to actually having something to work with and be able to maybe encourage the community. It's not a good idea to bring those chickens home from the childcare centre, okay, as I've done, and rear them up and think that, you know, they're part of the family. No, that's a big no. I think we can actually prevent the neighbours as well as the owners of the roosters being impacted by the rooster. Believe it or not, you do get attached to a rooster, and you're reluctant to get rid of it. So I'll test this, Mr. Mayor, see how we go.
Is that seconded? Councillor Schilling. Anyone against? Councillor Vlescu.
Have it, it's not prohibited, so we should change the wording to restricted or something like that. So I can see the point. I guess the spirit of the bylaws is fine if that's what we want to take, but I don't think we should be calling it prohibited.
Anyone else in favour? Councillor Telfer.
I like the sentiment of the fact that roosters and peacocks, noisy ones, are not permitted, but that there are exceptional circumstances that allow a permit. A young chicken can turn into a rooster. There is a whole time when you don't know whether it is a chicken or a rooster, particularly silky chickens. And then when they're noisy, it's time to do something about it, and that may take a little bit of time. So I think that's sensible that we do not permit roosters and peacocks, noisy ones, but that we, in exceptional circumstances, allow a permit so that we manage what we're doing.
Anyone else against? Then I'll put the motion. Oh, sorry, I'll go back to Councillor Hull. Anything in reply? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority, so that's fine. Okay, they're off for consultation. On to page 293, the deed in relation to access improvements for Marino Marina Rocks railway stations. So obviously a lot of background to this, and it really is just authorising the Mayor and the CEO to affix the seal to a funding deed for the work to be done. Councillor Gard moved. Anything to add?
Just for the background to other members, I have had a bit of a conversation with management about the ins and outs and ramps, etc. And it's a most positive initiative that's been conceived. There's more safety, more practicality, more accessibility, better pavements. So I do endorse this motion.
Seconded, Councillor Schilling. No one against. Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Page 312. If the Chief Executive Officer has a position outside of Marion Council, it's up for us to approve. This one's straightforward, as explained there. Moved, Councillor Hutchinson. Seconded, Councillor Pryor. Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And we'll move on. Page 313. elected member reps for the council assessment panel. Could I begin by just asking for an expression of interest? Councillor Telfer's putting a hand up. Any others? Perhaps any interest as deputy?
Just a question.
Councillor Hull?
What night will they be meeting on again? Just Wednesday night?
Still Wednesdays. Did I have Councillor Clancy? Deputy? Was there... I have a nomination for the rep and I have a nomination for deputy. Are there any other nominations? Then I'd invite... now, Councillor Telfer and Councillor Clancy may wish to leave the room for this vote, but would someone like to move Councillor Hutchinson, Telfer to be the member, Clancy to be deputy member? Someone like to second that? Councillor Pryor? All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Could you ask those councillors to come back in? Thank you. And Ms. McKenzie's just noting conflict of interest because it is potentially a paid position. So it's an actual conflict, I suppose. Questions taken on notice register. I will ask members if you have any questions arising. Councillor Schilling. You can. Let me just... Is that all of the motions for this council meeting and the next? No? Sorry. Just checking. Moving all of the corporate reports for noting. We could say also noting the questions with notice as well. However, I will be liberal in allowing questions on any of those items. So that's moved. Any comments? No. Seconded, Councillor Pryor. Anything there? Very well. Before dealing with the matter, I'll invite questions. Councillor Hull.
The question that I asked about dog registrations on 320. Page 320.
Thank you.
It seems to be out of context of what I asked. What I was asking is how many dogs were registered in the period, you know, in that, without getting any concession for the fact that, say, if you had a new puppy now and you register it, which you're obliged to do, and then in 2 months' time, you've got to re-register it again and pay full toad odds. That's what my question was all about.
Ms. Perrin's here. Perhaps she could come forward, or another staff member, to respond to that clarification of the question. Right. All right. So, Ms. Perrin, are you understanding the clarification? Can you help Councillor Hull with that?
If I may just clarify, as the question was understood, it was how many new registrations are taken in the last quarter of the financial year. So the information is responding to that, but to seek some clarity if there's other information that you're seeking.
Well, I don't know why I would ask. I don't know why I would ask such a question. It was purely on that, having that, period where you get some sort of in lieu. That was why I asked that question, because it seems unfair that you do the right thing and register your pup and then you get penalised again in 2 months' time, or a month's time even. That was what my question was all about.
If I may...
I really don't want to...
Sort of having to pay twice in 2 months, that's the problem. Ms. Perrin, what can you say about that?
The registration period is set under the Dog and Cat Management Act, so it's set legislatively, not by council. But in the last report that came to council, when council endorsed the dog registration fees, council endorsed a puppy registration to go in some way to recognise that when someone gets a dog and it is a puppy and they're registering it for the first time. It was linked in the report and explained it can be linked to de-sexing, but it was to recognise in some way that someone may register a dog now, and then in a few months' time, if it's a puppy, they then have to register it again. So it's not wasn't all dogs; it was a puppy registration.
All right. Now, I actually had one in relation to the question on page 318 about the gallery, but I don't know if Ms. Veal-Tonetti or Mr. Brown would be here. Mr. Haridis might have a go, but the comment that's made by staff, the second paragraph, closing the gallery for one day a week is a greater loss than a 7.6-hour reduction. I mean, by definition, I would have thought one day a week, one working day during the week, is a 7.6-hour reduction in the wages bill. So I didn't understand that. Son. Chris, can you help me out on that?
Look, through the chair, I understand the observation you've made. Unfortunately, without the staff with the technical knowledge, I don't know if they're referring to that as a net across the week or whether a trading day covers 10 to 12 hours on any particular day and therefore the 7.6 reduction relative to having to be in the venue for a period of time on any given day. I can take that and circulate further clarification on that question, but I couldn't confidently answer that in detail.
Well, just to give context, the proposition was that if we are paying the gallery management group extra to have people there on Saturday and Sunday, they could do jobs that otherwise might have been done during a quiet weekday, so the gallery could have been closed for one day a week under that scenario, and I would have thought that was a 7.6-hour reduction in hours, but apparently it's not. So that's why I was... I'll leave it there. I mean, I'm just an employment lawyer. I don't understand. But all right, any other questions about the corporate reports for noting? Any other questions about the questions with notice? If not, then we can vote on those matters moved en bloc. All those in favour, carried unanimously. And I declare the meeting closed.